Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by Republican Christine Dudley, Democrat Salim Muakil, and Carol Felsenthal, well-known blogger. And also we'll hear from Marianne Carter with a political report from the great state of Tennessee. Our program tonight, coming from our home base at the National Radio Hall of Fame Gallery in Chicago on State Street, that great street, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289 if you'd like to email us a comment, btb@museum.tv. And if you want to join us on the World Wide Web, www.beyondthebeltway.com. And I was just saying to our guests over the weekend, I was checking the website, and we have clips and shows that go back to 1998. Not every show, but a vast majority of the shows. So if you ever want to stroll down political memory lane, you've either been a guest or maybe you're even a caller on the show at some point, you probably can check it out on our website, beyondthebeltway.com. Well, a busy week coming up. Super Tuesday is tomorrow in a number of states. And let's take a look at the races that we'll be watching on Tuesday night. First of all, Georgia will have its primary. And there are 76 delegates up for grabs in Georgia. Ohio, 66. Oklahoma, 43. Tennessee, 56. That's a total of 241. We'll talk about where the races break down in those areas in a moment. And then Massachusetts, Vermont, and Virginia. Romney expecting to do well in Massachusetts and Virginia, where really he and Ron Paul are the only ones on the ballot. And, of course, Vermont almost being obviously a neighboring state to Massachusetts. And then there are caucuses in Alaska, Idaho, North Dakota, and Wyoming. The one state, as we look to Georgia, where Newt Gingrich has got to do well, right at the moment it looks like he's in good shape. According to Real Clear Politics, it's 39.3 for Newt. Mitt Romney in second place at 23.8, but he's made a heavy media buy this weekend in Atlanta. Rick Santorum lagging at 20.5%. Ron Paul deep in the fourth spot at 6%. In Ohio, where we will also be talking about this a little bit later on in the broadcast, very, very tight. Rick Santorum slipped into first place at 34%, Romney at 31.3%, Newt at 15.7%, Ron Paul at 12%. Then in Oklahoma, overlooked for the most part, and probably overlooked because at this moment it appears that it could be a big blowout win for Rick Santorum at 41%, Romney at 20%, Newt Gingrich at 20.5%, I should say. Newt just a hair behind it at 20%, and Ron Paul at 7.5%. Those are some of the races, and again, a little bit later on in our first hour, we're going to hear a live report from the state of Tennessee, and next hour we'll take another look at what's happening, likely to happen Tuesday night in the Buckeye State. Chris Dudley, you are a card-carrying Republican. At this particular moment in campaigns, everybody likes to be talking about positive things. They like the focus to be on the candidates. Are you worried that so much of the past, at least 72 hours, has been focused on Rush Limbaugh and what he said and the retraction of what he said involving the testimony of Susan Fluke before the Congressional Committee, and once again thrusting contraceptives into the mainstream of discussion, which I'm sure you would just as soon not have happened?
That's true. All the above. Yeah, you can't deny, you know, that was obviously you don't control the party or the candidates don't control the messengers and the people on radio, TV, and otherwise. So, you know, that has been a distraction, clearly, as it relates to. But the focal point in these, in what you had mentioned, are these states coming up. And things become very parochial now. I mean, they become very parochial. Yes, there's the bigger issues from the national standpoint, but they become very parochial within the states to which these contests are taking place. And more important thing, and I say this all the time, and I know it isn't sexy and isn't fun, but get out the whiteboard. I've talked about this forever. It's the math right now in terms of getting to the 1,144. Romney clearly continues to have the advantage on the math and the selection of delegates.
And also we should say that in Virginia, Gingrich and Santorum aren't even competing there because they didn't get the
– In Ohio, and Santorum doesn't have full slates.
In Illinois, there's three congressional districts.
I think three or four. I'm not sure.
So, again, basic organization could hurt them. Now, Salim, I identified you as a Democrat. You're probably more of a liberal than a Democrat. But
progressive.
Progressive talk shows on WVON and with senior editor of In These Times, longtime guest on this program. As you from the other side, I mean, you don't want the Republicans to succeed in this race, but are you licking your chops? Are you saying that this is a group that's totally destroying themselves?
Yes.
Or, okay, you do say that.
Mm-hmm. I do say that.
So this, in your view, will be an easy reelection?
No, I don't say that.
Okay.
I don't say that.
Where is it going to become difficult?
Well, it's going to become difficult once Romney wins, which I think is an inevitable process. It has to be. The Republicans will certainly not commit party suicide or whatever word you
want
to use.
Why not? They've done it in the past.
Well, that's true. I mean, Goldwater comes immediately to mind. But
I'd say Bob Dole.
Well, at least they were trying.
We would debate the wisdom of the Republican primary voters, but their track record is not very good.
Not good at all, indeed. And I think that they've been driven to distraction by the presence of Barack Obama and his moderation. They want to call him a Marxist. They want to demonize him. And yet he's taking positions that are essentially moderate Republican positions. And so in order to distinguish themselves, they've had to go.
The Kathleen Sebelius decision on HHS, which started this whole contraceptive, you know, at least discussion. Obviously, the Republicans want to talk about as government overreach, as an attack on religious freedom. The Democrats are referring to it as an attack on women's health and contraceptives. As that issue is playing out, Carol Felsenthal, blogger and author, are you intrigued at this moment how, at least in my view, the Democrats, with the assistance of the national news media, seem to be making this issue about one thing, and it's contraceptives.
And the Obama administration and his aides, Axelrod, et cetera, are just managing this brilliantly. Yesterday, it was announced that Barack Obama is going to give the commencement speech at Barnard College, one of the most distinguished all-women's colleges. They had a knock off Jill Abrahamson, who's the new executive editor of the New York Times, who had been booked to give the speech. He's going to get in front of that audience in May, and he's going to milk this for all that it's worth. And, you know, when when she made that stupid move, and then Barack Obama and his people, maybe not him, but his people showed great nimbleness in turning it around, backstepping, and creating this wonderful issue for the Democrats
Was it really stupid? I said on the show that it came up, I said, you know what?
It was deliberate.
These people are smart.
Yeah,
they threw it out there. They knew exactly how everyone would react. And everybody reacted. The news media reacted. Rush Limbaugh overreacted. Santorum overreacted. Santorum has been playing defense ever since. I think it was a brilliant stroke.
With Bruce on this one.
They created. And I do believe in the conspiracy. And I want to get everybody's reaction to that. 1-800-723-8289. When we come back, your calls and more Talking Politics live every Sunday night from Chicago. From Oklahoma City to Cookeville, Tennessee, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. Thanks very much for joining us tonight. Carol, you were going to make a point about where this issue is coming down and whether or not, you know, whether or not Kathleen Sebelius just made the decision and then checked. I can't believe that
I think she checked before, but I don't think that the White House recognized what kind of reaction there would be. And when Cardinal Dolan of New York came strongly out against it, and he's so articulate and he's so well respected, and he could be possibly the first American Pope, I think then the White House very smartly wasn't rigid, was able to walk it back.
They walked it back, but again, it didn't appease a lot of people when they walked it back.
Well, I think there are a couple pieces of this puzzle here. as it relates to the Catholic Church and the bishops, as we were talking off air, the bishops, I mean, this started to, you know, come out within the church started to get all wound up about this before anybody else, because it's the bigger picture, not of the services that the Catholic Church provides in totality to communities, and that was being threatened with this order as well. And then the thing that I thought we did not do well and we need to come back to as Republicans is put a brighter light on the whole issue of Obamacare and the whole issue of where that's going to be, because it's getting ready to come to the Supreme Court, and that's where the bright light needs to start to shine as it relates
But they've totally missed it in the first 3 weeks.
I'm not disagreeing with that.
It was an opportunity
to
remind people of Obamacare, government overreach, and to remind people that that's why they threw the Democrats out of
control. And we need to come back to that.
Well, you know, I think that what Carol says is plausible, because they may have considered the fact that that Romney himself signed off on this kind of intrusive, what they would call intrusive medical coverage issue, and so they didn't think that it would be that kind of reaction. But the point is it forced a lot of Americans to reconsider the other part of the First Amendment. Everyone's talking about allow people to freely express their religious preferences, but also the Congress shall make no government that pushes a religion, and that can be construed. All of this can be construed as an overreach by the religious community to push their particular parochial values on other people.
But the issue of also freedom of speech. I mean, Rush Limbaugh doesn't feel he has freedom of speech, does he? Does he have freedom of speech?
Well, no. Rush.
He calls a woman a
slut.
And we have freedom.
Woman,
and he loses sponsors.
Calls this woman a slut and a prostitute, and makes the argument that birth control is for recreational, irresponsible sex only, when birth
Indeed.
Control, any adult...
But he was talking about government paying for it. He was talking about government paying
was,
for
but
it.
He was, but it came off sounding so crass, especially in light of that congressional hearing where you have a row of men talking about contraception and how we use it and what is it for, when in fact there are so many medical usages for it.
Well, and therapeutic uses,
now you're into this very uncomfortable place. We know in the general election that women are a majority of the voters. Therefore, you know, there's this whole little dance that's going on, and you start talking about contraception and sex, and I'm sorry, men get all sweaty. They don't want to talk about it.
And they don't know what to do with it. And what percentage of Catholic women use birth control? Something like 98%.
And that was one. But again, coming back to what does the Catholic Church, how are they through this? The issue of services to the community and what they do in terms of services
from a political standpoint, though, what's happening during this period whether it was a conspiracy to let this out, knowing and predicting how your opponent is going to react. I'm talking about the decision by the Obama White House. We had Democrats for 2 weeks in a row sitting in your chair, Salim, basically saying that they had made a mistake because they had underestimated how this riled up the Catholic Church.
It was not
smart for them to do it. But politically, what's happened is that as this issue comes forward, Santorum starts to move in the polls. Now, again, for the last week, it was Romney's on a comeback now, but it boosted Santorum into a two-person race, and once again, it thrust Santorum, because he became a viable candidate at that point, and he was doing well in the polls, that allowed the news media to look into his record. And as they looked into his record, they found a variety of things that are somewhat controversial to a broader election, although it may be music to the ears of some the most conservative elements of the Republican primary electorate. So he is surging at one point, and yet he's trapped talking about an issue that may be a turnoff to some moderates and may be hurting independents and may be hurting the party.
Suburban women.
It could happen. But today, appearing, I don't know if you saw the interview today with Rick Santorum, was a guest with Chris Wallace on Fox News Sunday. If you did not see the show and you are a strong supporter of Rick Santorum, look at the tape. Go online, look at the tape. It was one of the worst, I think, performances that I've seen Santorum make. I don't know whether he thought he was, because he was going on Fox, he was going to have a game of patty cake. He didn't have it. And it started when Chris Wallace decided to share with him and the audience some comments that Rick Santorum had made about contraception in the past. I want you to watch the reaction and watch the facial grimacing if you're watching this on television. Watch that as you watch this exchange today between Chris Wallace and Rick Santorum, and it starts with a tape of Santorum's comments on contraceptive several years ago.
Many in the Christian faith have said, well, that's okay. I mean, you know, contraception's okay. It's not okay. It's a license to do things in the sexual realm that is counter to what how things are supposed to be.
Senator, the Centers for Disease Control say that 99% of women in this country between the ages of 15 and 44 who have had sexual activity, and this includes Catholic women, they say that 99% of them at some point in their lives have used artificial birth control. Are you saying all those women have done something wrong?
I'm reflecting the views of the church that I believe in, and we used to be tolerant of those beliefs. I guess now when you have beliefs that are consistent with the church, somehow or another you're out of the mainstream, and that to me is a pretty sad situation where you can't have personal health beliefs. But that's not what the issue's about. The issue's about whether the government can force you to do things that are against your conscience. And that's what we've been talking about on the road. We haven't been talking about my own personal moral beliefs. We've been talking about what the government can do in forcing people to change or violate those beliefs.
Again, if you're listening to the show on radio, go and watch that tape. The blinking eyes, the deer in the headlight look, and it happened also later in the interview. I want you to take a look at that. And I want you to ask yourself if that's the Republican nominee you want carrying the standard bearer of your party in October and November, because his words are going to come back to haunt him again and again and again. He is not, in my view, and again, I generally don't endorse candidates on this show. But I will, and I think you've heard me over the last several weeks as a political commodity. I thought Rick Santorum is pleasant. He had a lot of positive things going for them. But that interview today, to me, this is the equivalent of Ted Kennedy's interview with Roger Mudd. If his campaign gets undone, I think people are going to look at the interview today with Chris Wallace on Fox. Look how stunned he is almost repeatedly from that moment on in the discussion. Again, if you're listening to us on radio, I want to get your reaction. I want to find out whether other people who saw that interview viewed it the same way that I viewed it. But as I've said many times, you cannot win an election if you're playing defense. And I think Rick Santorum will play defense all the way if he wins the nomination. He'll be on defense all the time.
Well, don't you think there's a little bit of an irony here? There had been some concerns about Mitt Romney's faith, being a Mormon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's all in the background.
That's never really come to the fore, and it's really kind of been, you know, quiet. But Santorum, where he comes from I was raised Catholic. I mean, where he comes from, there's a spectrum within the Catholic faith. And he comes from a much much more conservative. I don't know if he's Opus Dei, but
his children were educated in schools that are. And there's a very interesting profile of his religious beliefs in the New York Times today. And what the story that I'd heard before, that his wife was involved with romantically with an abortion provider who was in his 60s when she was in her 20s.
Who's reporting this?
This is in the New York Times. She left him to begin her relationship with Santorum and changed her beliefs from being extremely pro-abortion to being extremely anti-abortion. But the one thing that I wanted to mention is what's going on in the state legislatures with this abortion rule about women being forced to undergo ultrasounds and some transvaginal ultrasounds, which are extremely invasive. And I think that too, as governors like McDonnell of Virginia, who wants to be Romney's VP, had to walk that back and require just an abdominal ultrasound, but that will hurt him too. And this going on in the background, and you have the gay marriage issue too, and Rick Santorum is being whipsawed everywhere because of these issues that he can't control.
Bruce's point.
And he wants to get on the economy, but nobody else
Well,
does.
Again, that gets back to my point is as I've said, the Republican primary voters, in my mind, they've got a pretty bad track record for selecting presidents. Back shortly. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us. Our liberal tonight is Salim Mulakil. He's the senior editor of In These Times, one of the country's leading progressive periodicals, and he's also a talk show host on WVON Radio in Chicago. Christine Dudley also joins us, former executive director of the Illinois Republican Party, longtime political activist in Republican affairs, and she is from the great state of Indiana originally. And also with us this evening is Carol Felsenthal. She is a blogger for The Hill and the Chicago Magazine, and she is also author of the book Clinton in Exile, President Out of the White House, which covered President Clinton's activities since he left the White House, and he's still a very busy and active guy. And joining us now from her home in the great state of Tennessee, we welcome Marianne Carter. She is a longtime political operative of Republican stripes in the Volunteer State. And Marianne, nice to have you with us on Beyond the Beltway.
Hi, Bruce. How are you?
Okay. First of all, let me mention that the latest Rasmussen poll has Rick Santorum leading at 34%, with Mitt Romney at 30%. Newt at 18%, Ron Paul at 8%. But again, certainly 34 to 30 is within the margin of error. What can you tell us, looking beyond those Real Clear or Rasmussen poll numbers, what is your sense of what's happening in the state, and how are the political leaders dividing themselves up amongst the major challengers?
Okay. Well, let me start with just to let your listeners know, Tennessee is typically divided into three regions: East Tennessee, Middle Tennessee, and West Tennessee. East Tennessee starts conservative and gets less conservative as you go down I-40, so to speak. The bulk of Republicans...
So that's like Knoxville is one of the big cities in Eastern Tennessee.
Right. Knoxville represents East Tennessee. Nashville's Middle Tennessee, and Memphis is West Tennessee. The bulk of the Republican vote is going to come from the counties surrounding Nashville, which we call the collar counties, and then East Tennessee, and that would cover Tri-Cities, Chattanooga, Knoxville, and everything east to North Carolina. And that is typically, and if you just look at where the candidates have been, Rick Santorum happens to be in Memphis today. But I went back to take a look at where everyone has been this last week, and it's Knoxville, Nashville, Chattanooga, Tri-Cities. So the candidates are clearly know, too, where the bulk of their votes are going to come from.
And where is what when one, again, nationally, when one thinks of Tennessee, they think it as being part of the Bible Belt. So where do the evangelicals, do they dominate in any one of those three regions, and if so, where?
Not necessarily. This is the Bible Belt. Most people go to church. But it's not, we Republicans elect, I guess some conservatives might consider them moderates. I think we consider them more constitutionalists. But in the spirit of Fred Thompson, Lamar Alexander, Bob Corker, Howard Baker, so these are Republicans with conservative principles, but not necessarily, say, Rick Santorum on the social issues, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
I was listening to your show, and I can tell you not one person here has mentioned contraception. So that's not really an issue that matters to people. The economy matters to people. taxes, obviously. There's no state income tax in Tennessee. It's been tried to, people have tried to bring it up. It always gets voted down. So these are the real issues that people care about. So this sort of non-issue of contraception, that's just not going to play here because that's not what people are concerned about or interested in.
Now, Fred Thompson has been on television touting Newt Gingrich, and yet according to this poll, Newt is trailing badly. Who were the other brand name Republicans that, you know, within the state, and have they weighed in and made an endorsement?
Yes. Our governor, Bill Haslam, who's very popular, he heads up the Romney effort here in Tennessee. U.S. Senator Lamar Alexander has also endorsed Romney. Our other U.S. Senator, Bob Corker, has not endorsed anyone. Republicans hold 7 of the 9 congressional seats here in the state. Only 3 have endorsed, 3 members of Congress, and they have all endorsed Romney as well. Now, as you said, Fred Thompson has endorsed Newt Gingrich. There are a couple state senators who have endorsed Rick Santorum. And in fact, on Friday, the co-chair of the Newt Gingrich campaign, who is a state senator, left the Gingrich campaign and has now endorsed Rick Santorum. Mm-hmm. So there's still actually votes up for grabs here. But I think you mentioned the Rasmussen poll. There is other polling showing similar movement. I mean, I think that Romney is on the rise here in Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that there is enough time for him to actually win, though, because we have early voting here. So over 200,000 votes have already been cast, 80% of them in the GOP primary, which you would expect.
And is this proportional voting, Marianne, in Tennessee? Will it be divided up by congressional districts? It's not winner-take-all, is it?
It's not winner-take-all unless a candidate gets, I believe it's 66% of the vote, but no candidate's going to do that. So, yes, it will be divided up proportionately.
Your friend Chris Dudley has a question for you, Chris.
What is the – hi, Marianne. How are you? What is going on in the ground game there as it relates to this? Are you seeing a lot of – is the primary focus of message delivery and voter contact? You mentioned early vote. Obviously, in Florida, that was one of the hallmarks of the Romney campaign, where they banked the votes in advance. They walked into Election Day with more votes than Gingrich, and basically Gingrich had already lost. So are you seeing a lot of that ground activity in mail and phones, or is it primarily a media campaign at this juncture?
It's this is such an interesting question, Chris, because we have the third most delegates being distributed on Super Tuesday. And if you see Georgia to Newt Gingrich, that really makes us a prime target. But we haven't seen what South Carolina saw or what Florida saw. And so there is some stuff going on. I'll go through what each campaign is doing. The Romney campaign, they have the most money, so this pretty much makes the most sense. They're probably the most active, at least in the air war. The Restore Our Future is spending just about $1 million here.
And that's the super PAC, correct?
That's
and
Romney's
what, Marianne, you said that contraceptives was not the issue, but specifically under the economic headline, What is the issue or issues that really are moving Republican voters? What are they talking about?
Well, everyone's talking about the economy. And despite what you hear out of Washington, that unemployment is down and the economy looks like it's moving, people don't feel that out in the heartland. Literally outside of New York and Washington, I don't think people believe those numbers. So it is the economy. It is taxes. Quite frankly, it's still Obamacare. That is still a big issue, the huge federal mandate coming down on the people, the idea that you have to buy this, and what really does it mean for people. So that still has people very nervous because people still don't quite understand. All they know is that it's going to cost a lot of money.
Does anyone in the music business of a celebrity nature, are celebrity endorsements part of this primary season, or does that generally wait until the fall?
I have seen very few, and it doesn't really carry any weight here. So I haven't seen any of the country stars, which is typical of what you would see in Tennessee with Nashville, touting any of the candidates.
Salim Muwakkil has a question for you. He's our liberal.
Marianne, have you noticed any impact of all of this public furor around contraception and Rush Limbaugh and all of this discussion about whether the government is intruding into medical care? Has that had any impact on the voters that you can discern?
No, it really hasn't. I was at a big dinner last night, the Tennessee Conservative Union, and I probably spoke to 100 people at that event. Again, not an issue anyone brought up, not an issue any of the representatives of the candidates brought up. It was all about taxes. It was all about the economy. It was all about who's going to get this country back on track. There was some talk about what's going on in Afghanistan and the scariness of what's going on to our troops and, you know, do we need to just pull out of there? There was talk on that, and it's one of the first times reform policy was really mentioned, but I think this Quran burning has people scared for our troops over in
Middle
East.
Good point.
In this particular point, as we said, Santorum with a slight lead, certainly Romney within the margin of error, and yet you said most of the many of the elected officials, including the governor and Senator Alexander, supporting Romney. Would it be proper to say then, if Santorum pulls out and wins in Tennessee, that would be an upset? You would view that as an upset?
I don't think so. Santorum has been leading this whole time. His margin, though, has dropped steadily this past week. Not just the 4-point poll you mentioned, but he had been up about 20 points just 10 days ago, and the same poll who showed him up 20 now showed him up only 7.
Okay.
2 days
Marianne,
ago.
We are out of time. I thank you very much for being with us. Marianne Carter, Republican operative, joining us from Tennessee.
Thanks, Bruce.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago, and if you're listening to me on WLS Radio, our flagship station, or our television operations on Comcast or WYCC, a reminder that the museum at 360 North State has been designated as one of the early voting precincts or places to come and vote. If you're an early voter, we're at 360 North State, and when you come here, you can watch, and Garfield Goose will be keeping an eye on you, make sure that all the votes are counted, and you can spin the big the grand prize drum, and again, you can vote amongst the stars, as they say. That's at 360 North State. That's through the 15th of March, and it's between basically 9 and 5. And so if you're going to vote early. We don't let you vote often. We just let you vote early. In the remaining section of our first hour tonight, I do want to spend some time talking about a significant loss within the political discourse in the country. Obviously, Rush Limbaugh sort of dominated the back end of the news cycle last week with his comments, but the beginning of the week was really focused on Andrew Breitbart, the provocative and, I think, important blogger and journalist with a conservative bent, obviously, who died suddenly at age 43. Carol, you're a blogger. You're one of the pioneers in this field as well. How important was Andrew Breitbart to the political discourse and to the growth of internet journalism?
He was so important, and I was trying to think of somebody on the left to compare to Andrew Breitbart in terms of being such a key figure, and the only person I could come up with was Michael Moore, and I don't think that he begins to compare to Breitbart, because Breitbart was, it's as if he wore himself out long before his life should have been over. He was a person who never slept. He always had three or four things cooking at the same time. And he was said to have a video of President Obama in his college days, either at Occidental or at Columbia University, that was supposed to be released on March 1, which is the day that he died, and hence you had all these conspiracy theories going. But it appears that he died of a massive heart attack and that he had signs that this was impending and he didn't listen to them, including a visit to the emergency room where the nurse said to him, "You have very, very high blood pressure." And he said, "You're making it go higher by telling me about it," and then did nothing about it. But he was really one of a kind. And the oddest thing about the Breitbart story is that CNN was supposedly doing a program. He was going to be on the right and Anthony Weiner on the left as a kind of crossfire program.
Right. Salim Mowakil, again, I mentioned a longtime senior editor of In These Times, one of the country's leading progressive periodicals, and also you're a longtime writer and also providing in a web commentary as well. From a liberal perspective, how do you look at his contributions to the political discourse, and was he good for that discourse, or did he overplay his card?
I think he helped corrode it, really, because I think he intentionally proliferated falsehood. He was very energetic and innovative, and he utilized the medium pretty effectively in its emergence. You know, after coming out of the Drudge operation, he understood how to appeal to certain conservative impulses and whatnot. But I think, for example, in the Shirley Sherrod incident, and where he publicized her making a statement completely out of context, he knew it was out of context, and I think that was, you know, that helped corrode the discourse. That as some of that corrosion, we're reaping the effluent of it right now.
Would you agree with Carol that there isn't an equivalent on the left?
I would agree with that.
How
I think
come?
Michael Moore.
How come?
I think the left has a problem with needing to present nuance, and nuance is not very attractive, or not very. I used to say nuance is bad for Nielsen's, because people are not really that attracted to nuance, and the conservative side of the spectrum, they like this kind of straight
Chris Dudley. I mean, why would the left need it? They've got the New York Times and all the other newspapers. I mean,
well, so you call it the left. We call it corporatist.
Corporatist. So that's a good word. That's mm-hmm. I think that the Breitbart situation. I mean, I the conspiracy components that Carol was referencing. I just heard about those today, and I, you know, that onto itself speaks to the significance of who he is. Who he was to the discourse. If you're going to start conspiracy theories about somebody, they must have done something to upset the corporatists and everybody else. And I think that the value that he brings is still to be recognized one way or the other. I could actually agree some of it was bad, but I think getting the conversation in a different light.
But as
taking things out of context. Come on, please. Who doesn't do that when there's a journalist?
As a traditional Republican, and I say that as a compliment. A moderate traditional.
Well, that's a curse these days. Right?
You're an establishment.
I'm getting crankier in my old age, but yeah, you're probably
you're
right.
You're an establishment Republican.
Sensible Republican. That's good enough.
And yet. In the last 20 years, it is those who are on the right who can basically stir up the crowd, whether it's Rush Limbaugh or Andrew Breitbart or Sean Hannity or Mark Levin or anyone in the
Michael Savage,
anyone within the talk radio field, and Matt Drudge as well. They have led to at least a sharpening of the debate. Has that been good for the Republican Party from an organizing stand, in your view?
Oh, I think that there are definite aspects of it. And even as a traditional Republican, I mean, I tune in and listen because I think we're talking about issues of commonality, and we're also, as the party out of power, it's very important to always have that you know, that reflection into what's going on. And I think that in most cases they do a very nice job of bringing that conversation forward. Sometimes they step over the line, but in most cases, that's part of what should be done in America. You should put a shine of light.
I want to talk more about
that. The left isn't missing right now.
I want to continue this discussion in our next hour, 1-800-723-8029. If you're listening to us on radio, give us a call. We'll carry this conversation on. Carol, you've got to move on to another appointment. But thanks very much, Carol Felsenthal, for joining us in hour number one. Salim Muakil and Christine Dudley, they will continue in the next hour. If you're listening to us on radio, we'll be right back. If you're watching us on television, we'll see you next week. Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics. And joining us, featuring our comment in this hour, we have Republican Christine Dudley, Democrat liberal Salim Muakil, and joining us from his home in Youngstown, Ohio, we have Bertrand D'Souza. Bertrand, nice to have you with us on Beyond the Beltway again.
Good evening, Bruce. Nice to talk to you again.
Very good.
While.
Bertrand D'Souza is, knows politics in the state of Ohio backward and forward. He's been covering it for over 30 years. And, Bertrand, let's just take a look at the most recent poll that we talked about it in the first hour of our broadcast this evening. Those people listening to you on WKBN and our flagship station in Ohio, in Youngstown, it has Rick Santorum at 34%, Romney 31.3%, Newt at 15.7%, Ron Paul at 12%. That is a real clear politics average. Do you have any more up-to-date polls from specific news-gathering organizations that would give you a better sense of where you think things are on the ground in Ohio right now?
Every poll that shows right now, it's a toss-up. There is no doubt that Romney has a momentum. Remember, about a week ago, he was down by 7 points. And last week, indeed, he was down by about 11 points. So obviously he got a boost in Michigan, and he came to Ohio. There are some issues that obviously the voters of Ohio have been looking at. Santorum has been pushing very heavily on the values issues, as he calls them. And I'm wondering whether Romney pushing the idea that he's a businessman, he has not been in government, he has come out of his background is business, whether that is resonating in a state like Ohio, where there are still some major economic problems.
When you look at the state of Ohio, share with the audience geographically where the strengths are, at least the strengths from, let's say, evangelical voters versus more traditional voters, and certainly it starts, in your state capital, Columbus and Cincinnati, too, obviously major cities within the state that are more conservative than most big cities in America.
Right. Well, obviously, the urban areas, the large metropolitan areas, are Democratic and continue to be so, other than Franklin County, which is where the state capital is Republican. The southern part of Ohio, Cincinnati, that's strongly Republican as well. Our area, Northeast Ohio, is heavily Democratic. In fact, Mahoning County, Trumbull County, Cuyahoga County, where Cleveland is located, are our mainstays for the Democratic Party. And in any presidential election, Democrats have to do very well here. Not only in turnout, but in the margin of victory, in order to have a chance statewide.
Now, one of the things that happened to Santorum last week in Michigan, where Democrats could vote, a significant number of Democrats did vote for Rick Santorum, whether it was for mischief reasons or whether it was because they like his social issues and his positions. But in the state of Ohio, where the western part of the state, as you say, may be more blue-collar in nature, they're not going to be able to vote because it's Republicans only, correct?
No. Ohio has an open primary. In the past, it used to be that you had to sort of sign a certificate that said you were a Democrat or a Republican good standing in order to vote in the primary, but now it doesn't. However, for example, in this very heavily Democratic area of ours, there has been no sustained effort to get Democrats out to vote in the Republican primary. And very frankly, knowing the Democratic voters as I do, at least from our area, the circulation area of our newspaper, The Vindicator, I would venture to say that these aren't people who would be willing to cross over and vote a Republican ticket for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. They are hardcore Democrats, and you know, they believe in that. And so it's going to be interesting because, by surprise, the Romney campaign announced yesterday that Romney was going to come to Youngstown tomorrow.
Wow.
Now, there aren't a lot of Republicans in the Youngstown area, number one. And number two, remember Romney sort of has come out publicly and said he would not have supported the bailout of the auto industry.
Right.
The Mahoning Valley, the Trumbull and Mahoning counties, mm-hmm. are heavily dependent on the auto industry.
You got the Lordstown plant.
Absolutely. Has a major plant that's producing the number one compact car in the country, the Cruze. And there's a direct benefit to what happened with the bailout of the auto industry with GM and Chrysler. And it's
Bertram,
going to be interesting to see what
Bertram,
happens.
This is a great piece of news because, you know, political operatives know, you know, you send your candidate where the votes are or where the money is. That doesn't
exactly.
appear to be the case in Mahoning County. What's your answer to the question is, why do you think he would spend the day before the primary in one of the most Democratic counties in the state?
Okay, let me give it to you this way. There are three congressional districts in which Santorum has no delegates on the ballot. Two of the three are in Mahoning Valley.
Okay.
The sixth, which is in Columbiana County, and the 13th, which is the Youngstown area of Mahoning County. Now, Santorum has no delegates at all. So even if he won in these congressional districts, he would not have any delegates. And I'm thinking that the Romney people looked at this and said, well, it would be a major story if Romney lost in the 13th district or the 6th district where Santorum hadn't made the effort to have any delegates on the ballot. So I think he's just putting in an appearance to remind people that, you know, he is around, to remind people that he is the leading candidate, if you want to call him that, and that, in fact, he will remind people that Santorum didn't even care enough about this part of Ohio to have any delegates on the ballot.
And yet it's interesting because when Santorum has been talking about his electability in the debates, many of the debates, he's talked about his ability to get crossover former Reagan
right.
Democrats to vote for him like they did in western Pennsylvania, which
sure.
is very similar to obviously eastern Ohio in the it's a blue collar region. So again, it is kind of odd that on one hand he's talking about his strength and maybe the ability to connect with those voters, but you're right, sort of dismissing them and not even having enough delegates that they could vote for come Tuesday.
Yeah, he explained it this way. They're saying that the filing deadline was in December, and at that point he didn't have enough money, he didn't have enough organization, he didn't have any of those things, and therefore the campaign itself fell short as far as filing delegates. But there is the problem that he has is in Ohio is that there are 66 total delegates at stake. Each congressional district, each of the 16 congressional districts will have three delegates. So it's conceivable that even if Santorum wins, first of all, even before the election begins, he has cut himself off from about 18 delegates. And so there's an obvious problem here, and I think Romney sees that and is thinking that if he wins Ohio, and Ohio is a big prize, obviously.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
If Romney wins Ohio, then his momentum is tremendous playing the rest of the way.
Bertram D'Souza is with us. Stand by, Bertram. We've got a break for some spots, and we've got some guests here in Chicago that want to quiz you as well about Buckeye politics. 1-800-723-8289. Bertram D'Souza from The Vindicator in Youngstown, Ohio, if you've got questions about what's likely to happen in Ohio on Tuesday. Back shortly from Chicago. From Harris County in Texas to Columbiana County in Ohio, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. Thanks very much for joining us tonight. Christine Dudley is our Republican. Salim Muwakil is our Democrat. And our liberal around the table here in Chicago, and Bertrand D'Souza, a veteran political columnist and editorial writer for The Vindicator in Youngstown, Ohio, joins us as we go inside Ohio politics and what is likely to happen there this coming week on Tuesday. And Christine Dudley, our Republican, she's got a question for you, Bertrand.
Hey, Bertrand, how are you?
Good, thanks, Christine.
Good. We were talking about the Ohio has been such a microcosm for testing of new things in the political sphere, as you know. I mean, there's probably more election and consumer data about Ohio, micro-targeting, early voting. I have a lot of friends in the political operative world over there. I asked this in the first hour, and I'll ask it of you. What is being done, or what are you hearing on the ground as it relates to the early vote? And also, potentially, if you're here picking up anything in terms of the direct mail and kind of that granular detail and utilizing the micro-targeting to motivate voters, I'm assuming Romney has the advantage here, but I don't know what you're picking up on the ground.
Well, I think you need to understand, we are right in the middle of a very heavily Democratic area. And indeed, election boards have suggested that voting in the tri-county area, which I call Columbiana, Mahoning, and Trumbull County, is going to be very light. Because the Democrats don't have anything on the ballot, there are very few Republicans. Statewide, the rest of the state, I imagine, in the heavily Republican areas of Ohio, there is a major effort underway. In Ohio, absentee balloting is now permitted without a reason. So a lot of people
vote by mail, definitely.
You know, by my mail, or even going into the Board of Elections and voting early. You don't have to have a reason. And that is growing by each election. And so we haven't yet gotten the numbers as to how many early voters there have been. But I imagine if the past couple of elections are any indication, it's going to be pretty heavily. The Republicans have been spending a lot of time in the heavily Democratic areas. I mean, they've been in the Cincinnati area, in the Columbus area, in Dayton. But it's interesting for me, from where I'm sitting, that with Romney coming in tomorrow to Youngstown, it's going to be interesting to see how the Democrats react. An indication of what's going on in Ohio, and we're talking about what's happening in Ohio, is the election of John Kasich as governor in 2010 was a big surprise because nobody expected. Everybody thought that Ed Strickland was going to win re-election, but not only did Kasich win, but the Republicans swept every statewide office and also took over the legislature. And when you look through it directly into the numbers as to what happened, a lot of the blue collar workers stayed home and didn't go to the polls. So areas like the Mahoning Valley, Mahoning County, for example, that should have been voting very heavily, did not vote heavily. I tell this story about that 2010 election because it's a reflection of what's happening this year. The president of the UAW at Lordstown, the General Motors plant at Lordstown, went door to door and, canvassing for the Democratic ticket, for Strickland and the rest of the Democratic ticket, and his own members were telling him that they weren't going to the polls. And he was surprised because here were the Democrats who had saved Lordstown, and these very people who were now got jobs and working at the Lordstown plant were the ones who were sort of turning their back on the Democratic Party. And then the New York Times came up with that story of theirs about how the Obama campaign or Obama, people have sort of basically written off white, blue-collar workers. Those are the voters in areas like Youngstown.
And those also, Bertrand, we should just, again, to put it in context, even with the Democratic primary, the base that you're talking about was Hillary Clinton's base in the campaign against Obama. So I guess my question is, as we look ahead to November, it seems to me that that's another reason why there might be some reason for optimism by the Republican candidate. And I guess my question to you would be, is is Santorum because of his, and again, there's a large number of Catholic voters in Ohio as well. Does Santorum become a stronger candidate again in western Ohio? Your bailiwick. Does he become northeastern Ohio? I'm sorry, northeastern Ohio. Does he become a stronger candidate than Romney?
Right, and there is that, and it's interesting you should ask that because on Tuesday night, Santorum is going to be watching the election returns in a town called Steubenville, which is in Columbiana County in our circulation area.
Dean Martin's hometown. Dean Martin's hometown.
Yes, it is. But it also is the home of the Franciscan University of Steubenville, which has been in the forefront of Operation Rescue and the anti-abortion thing. In fact, I did a blog last night reminding people about how the president of Franciscan and the bishop of Steubenville and students from Franciscan University came to Youngstown to demonstrate against the abortion clinic and were arrested en masse in the city of Youngstown. So I think what Santorum is doing is appealing to the Catholic vote, obviously. But here's a problem I think he has. The Catholic voters in our area and in the Mahoning Valley were very, very strong JFK supporters, John F. Kennedy. And when Santorum came out with his comment about JFK, relating to the fact that because of JFK's trident separation of church and state and his reassuring the country that the Vatican would not be telling him what to do in the White House, and said then used the word that made me sick, I think that turned off some of the Catholic voters in our area. Because they still talk very, very fondly of John F. Kennedy.
Salim Mukil has a question for you.
To that point, I've been wondering and asking this question: do you discern any effect of all of this recent talk about the social focus on social issues and contraception and all of that debate that Santorum has kind of fomented? Do you detect any change in the dynamics of the primary because of that?
I don't know what changes the dynamics of the primary, because obviously Republican voters in Ohio are values voters, and that was proved in 2004. If you remember, Karl Rove had this 11-state strategy, and Ohio was one of them, in which he decided that they were going to put this marriage amendment, constitutional amendment defining marriage between a man and a woman, in every state of ballot in those 11 states. Ohio was the main one. The Kerry campaign did not realize what this was doing. It generated a lot of first-time white rural voters.
And notoriously black voters as well, isn't that correct?
Absolutely, who came to the polls because what the Republicans did was warn the people of Ohio that if you don't pass this amendment that defines marriage between a man and a woman, they're going to have all of these gay people from around the country coming to live in Ohio. It was interesting that the CEO of Procter & Gamble at the time warned the people of Ohio, saying that a multinational corporation like Procter & Gamble would be hurt in Cincinnati because if you pass this kind of an amendment, it will indeed, you know, sort of dissuade individuals who are either gay or who are, fair-minded from coming to do research and development in Ohio. But yet that amendment passed and George Bush won. And because of his victory in Ohio, he was able to hold on to the White House. I think that the Santorum people have looked at that election and have decided to follow the same game plan, where they're pushing heavily on those values issues.
In the fall, if Romney were to end up as the nominee of the party, does he, in your view, have the ability to reach out and touch some of those blue collar Democrats and get them to the polls?
Yes, he does. And the reason being that even though the economy is turning around, even though there are direct results of the White House and the Obama administration's economic policies that can be seen in Ohio, there is still this undercurrent of dissatisfaction. There's still a lot of people who aren't happy with the way the economy has gone. And one of the problems Obama has that I think Romney also views, looks at, is this. The coalition that Obama put together, if you remember, in 2008, were made up of a lot of young voters and a lot of first-time, you know, black voters, especially in Ohio. That coalition, I think, is going to be difficult to bring back, because those young people are the people who are now very dissatisfied with the fact that they can't find jobs or not the kinds of jobs that they wanted. A lot of them are staying in college and in universities because they can't work, they can't find work, and so they're staying and they're, you know, sort of getting, their bills are piling up and college debt is piling up. I think Romney offers a solution that right now the people of Ohio don't see with Obama.
Well, listen, and again, of course, before election time comes around, they will ask, are you better off today than you were 4 years ago? And a lot of people in Ohio would say they're not. So that's always
absolutely
very tough. Right. Listen, Bertrand D'Souza, we are out of time for this segment. I want to thank you very much. Again, a frequent guest on this program over the years since we've been on our station in Youngstown, WKBN, editorial writer and columnist for The Vindicator in Youngstown, Ohio, Bertrand D'Souza. Thank you for your meticulous description of what's happening in the Buckeye State. And again, we look forward to the results coming Tuesday. Bertrand D'Souza, thanks for being with us on Beyond the Beltway. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us this evening. Christine Dudley is here. She is a longtime political consultant, former executive director of the Illinois Republican Party. And the Illinois primary is 3 weeks from
March 20th. Tuesday, March 20th.
And we'll all be there covering it on WLS Radio, our flagship station, along with the WLS news team. Salim Uwakil joins us. He is the senior editor of In These Times and a longtime, I guess it's a longtime talk show host now at WVON, right?
Yeah, long time.
How many years?
Well, this incarnation has been 5 years. Since
5 years. And before that?
I did it from 94 to, I think, 98.
So you've been a guest on this show, one of the offspring talk show hosts.
Yes.
Yeah, Tom Bevins is coming up next on WLS.
Tom Bevins is next, and, of course, the late Tom Roser, and... A lot of people spawned, Bruce.
Yeah. Even Cliff Kelly.
One of our great alums of this show. Then of course, then
whatever happened to that guy Rahm Emanuel?
Rahm Emanuel, the regular. He was.
What happened to him?
He hasn't done the show lately. maybe we'll do the show. Let's go back to calls. We have hogged the conversation way too long. Again, give us a call. Let's go to John, listening to us on WLS. In Crete, Illinois. Go ahead.
Thank you, Bruce, for taking my call. Yeah, I just heard a advertisement, I guess you call it, of Romney's voice within the last 24 hours, and he mentioned four things, probably things like economic things. He completely was devoid, did not say anything about, you would say, social, cultural, I would say moral issues. Whereas, and then also, Bruce, you said that you saw or heard the old film or something, an older film of Santorum, and what he said. Well, Santorum is consistent with his belief and the church's belief then as now, and that's good. And also, George Washington, the founder of this country, said religion and morality are indispensable. So Gage and Santorum are consistent with the foundation of this country. So I think all the evangelicals, and also they have been connecting with the Catholic Church about freedom of religion. So I think in Ohio and Tennessee and others that they really should join together and vote for Gingrich or Santorum.
Well, again, we're going to find out. I mean, I don't think that Gingrich is likely to do well anywhere except in Georgia. And, of course, if he ends up going to the convention in Florida and he ends up with 76 delegates, 76 delegates at the very end, maybe a lot of delegates.
It could be.
That's another one of the reasons why I think people like to stay in, because there is more than one political pro believes that getting to 1144, which is the magic number, might be tough. And so you walk in there with a pocket of 76 or even Ron Paul's, I think, 35 votes. That could mean something in Tampa.
It could. And I think one of the other thing outliers here, at least coming up on Super Tuesday, and you mentioned at the top of the first hour, Bruce, is the issue of the caucuses. Yesterday, Romney mm-hmm. won the Washington caucus.
State. Mm-hmm.
I would say Idaho. And remember, there is a fair amount of concentration of Mormons. We've been talking about ethnic and religious politics here in the Midwest and in the South. But in the West, the Mormon population, as you saw in Arizona and Idaho, I think Idaho will have the same impact. So and they're actually, if I looked at my numbers correctly, I think they've got quite a few delegates in Idaho, 32, mm-hmm. which is not a small number. Mm-hmm. Again, yeah. to your point,
right.
you know, when you're trying to build up to that magic 1144 or have extras in your pocket, a small state like Idaho does have an impact, and caucus politics are different than primary politics.
They are indeed. Sure. But I think, you know, this Mormon issue is a sleeper issue as well. I think it would add to the discourse an understanding of how you have to be careful of how religion intrudes into the public
Let's
square.
Think about Reverend Wright for just a moment, okay?
Well, no, I'm not.
No, I'm saying that. No, I'm agreeing with you. Mm-hmm. You know, we have to be very careful.
We have to be very careful. And in fact, when someone like Newt Gingrich talks about how this has been the most intrusive attack on a religion in history, think about the Mormon Church. At one point, the Latter-day Saints, they practiced polygamy. It was the state.
We birthed them out of Illinois.
Well, it was the state that demanded that they change their religious observance. And so they no longer practice polygamy. Were they to be true to the Mormon faith, they would still be demanding the right to practice polygamy and would be excoriating the state for demanding that they change their beliefs. And I think that that's something that we don't talk about, and it indicates how a lot of this debate has been argued from the wrong side, I think.
But again, when you look at an extension of what you're suggesting maybe should happen. Mm-hmm. In the wake of, obviously, Rick Santorum's strong belief in the Catholic Church. And not so much, there hasn't been so much Romney on the defensive with Mormonism this campaign, but there certainly was 4 years ago when he ran. Mm-hmm. The question is, at this particular moment where our economy is where it is, are we, when I say we, including myself, are we doing a significant disservice to the electorate when we spend so much time talking about these issues and not issues like jobs, unemployment, education,
regulation,
taxes, drilling for oil?
I agree.
I think,
but
you know, we should.
You heard your caller. That was the issue that
But the wrong track in this country, and you know, in the real color politics, it's still sitting at 59%. And what Marianne Carter said from Tennessee in the first hour is that, you know, she's at a conservative union event last night where the issue was talking about the agenda. It's, you know, talking about that granular detail of regulation and whether we should frack or not frack. Mm-hmm. I don't know that that's, you know, it sells papers or gets people motivated to call into a talk show. So I do think that there's a bit of disservice when you talk about religion. Everybody's got an opinion or has their own beliefs,
right.
Where they may not know the nuance and the difference between fracking or not fracking. And that's an important issue.
I like the way you say that, Chris.
Thank you.
but as someone who's trying to put together,
it's coalition politics. I mean,
but for every day in the campaign or week in the campaign, when either the Democrats or their buddies in the national news media, who like to drive a particular discussion, in other words, there was more discussion on the Sunday morning shows today about what Rush Limbaugh said,
mm-hmm.
that he lost sponsors. They went into the contraceptive. They went into all of that.
Oh, yeah, front page of the New York Times. It's about the Catholicism of of Rick Santorum. There's also an interesting article about the stuff that I love, which is Romney traces Obama path on delegates and talks about the whole selection of the delegates and how you get to the number. But to your point, you know, and
we're not talking about it.
This is the New York Times.
We're not talking about issues that
I don't see one
should drive people to the ballot box.
Well, again, I think people get motivated and they get religion and what were we taught as kids? Never talk about religion and politics.
Well, I think religion is really what motivates people to go to the ballot box.
I mean, here in Chicago, and Salim, you can speak. I mean, where is the place where the black community goes for their politics? Politics from the pulpit.
Right.
I mean, that has been a time-honored tradition for anybody running in statewide politics here in Illinois to take the tour. Mm. Two Sundays before, and there are like six churches that you don't miss, and you go see the reverends, and the reverends talk about, you know, the role of that person in the community. And
from a Republican perspective, and again, you're a moderate establishment Republican, and I say that, you know, in all deference. That's not meant to be a pejorative.
With a sneer on it.
I know that to many people listening to the program, that is a pejorative. That's not the way that I put it in context. You are part of the Republican fabric.
I want Republicans to win.
And you want Republicans to win, and those people who are listening, many of them want Republicans to win as well. But a reality given not only the position of one candidate, but the way in which the national media, again, as sort of a subsidiary of the Democratic Party, the way they frame the issues, every time they're talking about contraceptives and they turn into a woman's health issue, every conservative Catholic or every evangelical that might say, yes, this is what we want our candidate to be talking about because these issues are important to us. You can hear suburban moderate Republicans turning their back, going the other way. Can't you?
Yes. Well, I think you can. I think,
sensible
again,
Republican.
We're coming down to sexual politics now. When I say that, gender politics,
yes,
more importantly, is there is that, again, that 52% where where women are going to evaluate this issue in a different perspective than the men will evaluate that. And I don't think it really is. For example, I'm a hawk. I mean, you know, I'm very much a hawk, and I'm very much so, you know, Republican suburban women come in all kinds of different stripes, colors, and perspectives. So they will evaluate that question much differently than Republican men will. And I think we'll see.
Will those suburban Republican women?
We've got to turn it back to the issue of Obamacare and the role of Obamacare as opposed to that particular issue within that argument.
I want you to give when we come back, I want you to respond to that, Salim.
Okay.
And then Chris, I want you to give some on-air free advice to Mitt Romney about how he turns this discussion around, because he ain't turning it around right now. Back shortly from Chicago, 1-800-723-8289. I'm Bruce Dumont. Thanks for joining us tonight. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. During the break, we were talking about the fact that Rick Santorum has missed some filing deadlines. He's not on the ballot in Virginia this coming Tuesday. And in some congressional districts down the road in Illinois, we know there's three or four. And in Ohio, we know there's three.
He barely survived in Indiana getting
right
on the ballot.
But it goes back to basic organizational skills early on. Now, he laments that, you know, when he ran for president early on, he wasn't doing well in the polls. And he obviously talks about Romney having all the money. Well, Romney has all the money and all the organization because Romney was able to sell himself to people who have money, who invested in him. And so he was able to amass the infrastructure because people had confidence in his abilities.
Well, and
Rick Santorum had the same opportunity, But until a very small number of people in Iowa gave him the nudge and gave him the victory in Iowa, no one was taking him seriously.
But 4 years ago, and I was a part of the team that helped put Fred Thompson's slate together here in Illinois.
They did a wonderful. How'd that go for you?
Well, but we full slate, full signatures, and not a lot of money to do it. But
everything was great except the candidate.
We were organized, but as part of the whole overall picture that you have. There's a complexity to the 50 states. There's a complexity to the process. Yeah. You can argue whether the process is good, bad, or indifferent, but you better understand it and don't whine about it if you can't get get the job done.
That's right. No, absolutely. I mean, and as we said during the break, that's really what impressed national analysts about the Obama campaign is that they were very meticulous in how they dealt with
nuts and bolts. By the way, real clear policy. These are national averages. Romney at 36.7, Santorum at 27.3, Newt at 15.3, Ron Paul at 9.7. And in the only numbers that really count at the moment, Mitt Romney at 173 delegates thus far, Santorum at 74, Ron Paul at 37, and Newt Gingrich at 33. And again, 1144 is what you need. And according to the Rasmussen poll, these are head-to-head tracking polls for the November election. Obama leads Romney 47-43, and he leads Santorum 47-43. Does that surprise you that Santorum is even with Romney in a matchup against the president?
A little bit, but I think again it comes back to that other number that's not on there, which is the wrong track question that I mentioned earlier. It's at 59%. Some are as high as 67% in some states. The wrong track is really driving this whole thing where people are just, they're uneasy, they're unsettled, they're willing to take an opportunity to look at another alternative.
In case you just tuned in, I mentioned in the first hour this evening, if you did not see Fox News Sunday today, it's available online. You've got to go and take a look at it. It's Chris Wallace doing an interview with Rick Santorum. And it's not a very good outing for, I guess that's a bad word for Rick Santorum. It's not a good appearance for Rick Santorum. Take a look at it, especially on the issue of when they get into the discussion of contraceptives, and take a look at almost the startled deer in the headlight look a couple of times during that interview by Rick Santorum, and ask yourself, is that who you want as the standard bearer in October against the onslaught of the Obama campaign? John in Mundelein, Illinois on WLS, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. My opinion is this. If the Catholic Church and politicians who represent their interests, like Rick Santorum, really cared about the broader issue of the Catholic Church not being compelled to subsidize things they find immoral, they would be complaining about their tax money being used for executions and bombs. The health insurance that the Catholic Church provides covers vasectomy and impotence care and Viagra. This is not about any broader idea of morality. This is about targeting one thing and one thing only, and that is the sinfulness of women who use birth control. Any assertion that this issue is about the broader religious freedom of the Catholic Church not being forced to subsidize things they find immoral is a complete lie. It's about one thing. Women who use birth control are sinful. That's it. That's all it's about.
That sounds about right to me as well. I think it does expose kind of the hypocrisy of many of the champions of this stuff. It exposes them as being, having kind of a very selective view of what morality is, because as the caller points out, there are many, many things that take place in violation or at variance with Catholic morality, and yet the same kinds of protests are not being launched against those particular issues.
But how do you respond to those people that say that what this really is, as it extends to Obamacare, an interpretation of Obamacare, mm-hmm. it is the government basically telling you, directing you that you have to do this.
Well,
it's a dictate. It's a mandate from the federal government that is in violation of some people's religious beliefs.
Well, it allows those people who have those beliefs to opt out if that's their desire. What the government has to do has to do is provide a secular public square that doesn't respect any particular moral belief, nor does it prohibit any expression of a particular moral belief. That's the job of a secular government. That's our constitutional duty.
I think we should still get back to the issue of why we even have Obamacare in the first place and take the pieces of that and pull it apart and talk about beyond the issue of this has brought it back, the attention back to the issue of Obamacare, and I think we should go deeper into that and the impact.
If we are talking about Obamacare in October, it'll be a good year for the Republicans. If we're talking about contraceptives,
unless Romney is the
it's going to be another 4 years of Barack Obama. On that note, Salim Mulkill from In These Times, thank you very much for being with us on WVON Radio. And Chris Dudley, veteran political operative, thanks very much for being with us this evening. This program is a Genevieve production produced in association with WLS Talk Radio in Chicago. That is a Citadel station. Tom Vera Cruz and Dan Dorfman and Khalil Palil help make this program possible. Until next week at the same time when we'll be talking about all the Super Tuesday balloting, this is Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.